Hey everybody, and thanks for coming back to Serial Zombie Mom. So this episode, a little bit differently done than some of the others that I've done, mainly because I knew nothing of this case, nothing at all whatsoever when I sat down to research. Okay, normally I at least kind of have some basic knowledge of the case, or what's happened, or a little bit about the victim or the murderer, or something like that. But in this case, I knew absolutely nothing. Okay, so I had to take an extra day to really, or two to get kind of down into the deep dive of this and get a little bit of the extra information. Okay, and spend a little time trying to discern, some of the information that's out there. So in this case, I want to thank my cousin, or my husband's cousin, Des, for this suggestion. Now, she said that it would definitely be one to interest me. We were talking about true crime, we were talking about, our interests and stuff, and she says there's a documentary that you should watch, and I think it would really interest you. So she tells me about Goodnight Sugar Babe. I'd never heard of this before. I'd been on Amazon 100,000 times, looking through the true crime stuff, and I had never seen this. So I was like, well, shit, okay. She was like, you gotta look it up. You gotta look it up and watch this. It's some crazy shit. So I looked it up and found it on Amazon Prime and rented it to watch. I think it's only like $2. So if you want to watch this, it's a lot of information really fast, and it's kind of a little bit of a clusterfuck because it's all kind of blended in very quickly. And it took me two or three times to watch to really get the detail of the case. But I did go and find, quite a few websites and articles and things like that that I was able to go in and really kind of piece together things, everything a little bit better. Now, as soon as I turned on this document, I started to wonder, what in the meth-mouthed, psycho-incestuous bullshit is going on here? But as I watched, my heart broke for the naive victim in this case. My heart seethed against the bastards that hurt her. So this is all about the story of Vera Jo Riegel, also known as the girl on the tracks. She also, when you look up some of the stuff, goes by the last name Messersmith, and I'm not sure if that was her mother's second husband, or exactly how that name came into play, but her birth father was R William Riegel. So she was born July 11th of 1986, but at the time of the case was a 24-year-old mother to one who had had one hell of a sad and abusive upbringing. Vera lived in Findlay, Ohio, and the poor thing had really just been through it all. Being abused in multiple ways, including sexually abused by her own father at 11, as well as her mom's boyfriend after that, that would turn into her stepfather. Little update I want to throw in here that I just found, this morning before I got into all this, I did find out that her real father, William Riegel, is serving a 20-year sentence, but I'm not entirely sure of his charges. I'm not sure if it's, rape or molestation or what, but I know he is serving a 20-year charge right now. Now, during the documentary, you find out a lot about Vera, but it's thrown in kind of quickly, almost as a secondary, about her upbringing, about what she went through growing up. Everything else is more around the case and what happened in the case, okay? So she enjoyed being around people. She enjoyed people. She enjoyed school. You know, she had some struggles. She did have ADHD, and it was suspected that she had quite a low IQ and may have been mentally incapable. Everything tended to use the word mentally retarded, which I'm not very comfortable with that term. But she had a diminished mental capacity, okay? When people kind of went in and explained a little bit more of what her mental capacity was like, they mentioned the fact that, you know, at 19, 20, 24, you know, her mental capacity was that of like an 8 to 12 year old. Okay. So that's going to explain a lot of things in here. She was really just a people pleaser. She wanted to make everybody happy. Okay. So she did get help with school. She graduated, and even though she had this really, really great spirit about her, she was very easily manipulated. And unfortunately, at this point on, things would really only just decline in her life. Now, at 19 years old, she meets 13-year-old Zachary Brooks, and the two start dating. Yes, you heard me right. 13-year-old Zachary Brooks. Now, this kind of just shows exactly where her mental capacity starts to affect her. Like, proves that she's looking at people at the in the eyes of an 8 to 12-year-old. So, that 13-year-old boy, you know, you can see her having this crush on this kid, okay? Now, this 13-year-old boy would absolutely prove to be her downfall. Now, we look at this, and most times you would think that Vera would be the predator here, as far as age is concerned, and that she would be the one facing statutory rape. In reality, it was Zachary and his family that were the true predators here. His mother, Sherry Lynn Brooks, and her family, at this point, they decide to offer Vera a chance to move in with them. She jumps at the opportunity and moves into the piece of shit, two-story, just house that honestly should have just been condemned. It was horrible, okay? Just nasty. But her moving in with them will prove to be the worst decision of her life. Now, if only she knew truly what kind of people they were and had the right people in her life to help guide her on a better path. But she didn't have that here. She was very close with her sister, loved her sister, they were best friends. And it's just kind of heartbreaking because her going into that home, she lost her connections to the outside world. Now we have to take a little break away from Vera, however, and introduce you formally to the meth mouth matriarch, couch potato piece of ass that was Sherry Lynn Emmons Maloney Brooks. Now she's also known as Sugar Babe. So hence the title of the documentary, Good Night, Sugar Babe. Apparently these were the last words of Vera Jo Regal. Now Sherry was the mother of nine. Yep. Nine children. However, she lost to the first five kids, one at a time, for sexual abuse. Now, Scotty was her oldest, and he was fathered by Sherry's own first cousin, and Scotty, unfortunately, had some mental disabilities as well. After Scotty was Michael, and I'll be honest, interviews in that documentary with Michael, I see some diminished mental capacity with him as well. Some neurological things, twitches, that kind of stuff. So I don't know what his, neurological diagnoses or whatever are, but I noticed that really quickly. Next, she had Maria. Then she had Joshua. And then little Sherry. Yep. She named the child after herself. And all these children suffered sexually at the hands of their own mother in one way or another. Now, Maria became removed as a baby, being only about 1 year old at the time that she was raped. I'm sorry, but this sickens me to my core. Like, absolutely. I don't understand how anyone can look at a child, especially a baby, in a sexual way. Like, I just don't get it. I don't look at that and see sexy. Like, I don't look at that and see, I don't get a feeling, you know, when I look at something like that. I don't get the warmth or the, you know, I don't get turned on by it. I'm sorry. I don't understand how people do. It makes me really sick on my stomach. Now, Sherry thankfully got spared of the abuse and was taken at the time she was born. Okay, this is the youngest. She was taken from the hospital. So Sherry didn't even be able to bring baby Sherry home. Thank God. Now, I don't know if something happened at the hospital or if they just finally, you know, wisened up to the fact that, look, we've taken these other four. Like, we might as well take this one, too. I really don't know. Unfortunately, a few of the kids wound up back with her over the years. And somehow, her next four children were not taken away. Here's my question. How the fuck wasn't she sterilized by the time that they realized what she was doing? I don't know. I think awful people like this should be kept from procreating at all. I've seen people who have been court ordered to have tubes tied or, you know, whatever. Like, why can't they do that? Why can't they see that after the first time it's done instead of waiting until the person has 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 children? It just baffles me. Oh no, let's keep letting her have kids. Are you fucking crazy? Like, the kids have got mental issues. They're going through the abuse at the hands of their own mother. Like, I don't get it. I don't get it. She didn't deserve to have any children. I don't understand it. So she has the four other children, okay? Kevin was the oldest of these four, almost like a second generation of kids. And he went by the name Punky. Next, she had Zachary, then Garth, and then young Chucky. Now, Sherry just happened to be the leader of what she turned into a bit of a crime family. Now, she's been compared to Charles Manson, and they call her family a cult. Now, one thing I'll say about this as well is she's got a lot of similarities with Charles Manson. Some of the places they've been, I think even the orphanage or the home that she had to go stay in, I believe he stayed there 30 years before her. So this is, you know, it's really strange, some of the similarities she has, okay? Even with, like, Bundy and some of these other serial killers, she's got some similarities between some of these people. It's a little scary. Now, though she's morbidly obese and disabled, mostly in a wheelchair, she's a fucking horrid woman, okay? Some people say she looks harmless, you know, what can she do, you know, she can't even get up to do things for herself, but she's an absolute fucking monster. She's a sadist, criminal, sociopath, baby rapist, and a master manipulator, convincing her family and those around her to consistently be at her beck and call and do all her dirty work for her. I mean, this woman barely has any freaking teeth in her mouth. They're rotted out of her head, either from bad hygiene or drugs or all of it. Who knows? But she is one of the most despicable human beings, and I hope that eventually she rots in hell. Now, it is necessary, however, to give you a little bit of a background into Sherry, because she had a pretty tough upbringing as well. You know, and while you feel sorry for the child of that person, like, the child version of that, it's what turned her into what she is today. Now, like I said, pretty tough upbringing. She was sexually abused by her own father, Big Chuck, which I find it very, not a surprise that she called her youngest boy Chucky, especially when I get through all of this. Now, he was the one that gave her the nickname Sugar Babe. He sexually abused her until she was about 3 years old. It started during infancy. And, I mean, here she was, just this little toddler, going through all this shit, okay? She eventually goes into foster care, but in her teens, as soon as she can leave foster care and get out of the system, she leaves and goes back to her father, Big Chuck. Now, he forces her to clean naked and abuses her sexually and beats her almost daily. She then continues a sexual relationship with her father through the years, even after she meets and marries Kevin Brooks, who fathered most of her children. Now, unfortunately, a lot of times when you have someone that goes through this much abuse, the abused tends to become the abuser. And unfortunately, the cycle continues until someone steps in and shows that it's not right. Now, this is not to say that everyone who's abused will abuse. That's not the case at all whatsoever. But sometimes things are done that they don't realize is bad, and then they have to be told, you know, hey, that wasn't cool. Like, you can't do that. That's not appropriate. Because they've been through all this abuse, and they've been going through these things, and they think it's appropriate. They think that's what they're supposed to be taught, or that they should be doing. It's not until someone comes in and makes it a violent, scary thing that people start to realize a lot of times that it's wrong, or until it goes into adulthood and then they find out from friends that this stuff's not normal. Now, this didn't happen for Sherry. She just went right back into the cycle, and it continued and continued and continued. Now, I don't think she even cared at this point who knew that she was carrying on this relationship with her father. However, DCF wound up only taking the kids one at a time, which in my opinion makes absolutely no sense. They should have taken them all at once. It didn't matter if she was only abusing one child, or if they thought she was only abusing one child, all those children should have been pulled from the home at one time. Now, we do know that at one point, she was living in a duplex during, you know, the time that she had the first five kids, I think. That she was living in a duplex next to a woman with a younger daughter. Now, it turns out this woman was Vera's mother. This little young daughter was Vera. Now, it can be assumed that, you know, what happens in a duplex, you know, if you're both single women that got kids and one's got to go to work and the other one's home, hey, can you watch my kid? You watch her for a few hours so I can go take this shift? So it is assumed and very possible that Sherry may have sunk her teeth into Vera at a very young age, when she may have had to watch her for Vera's mom. Now, of course, this is insinuated. We're really not sure. And it could have been that she was just watching her and, you know, getting the ideas in her head about grooming her or something. I'm not sure. We don't know all this for sure. But, you know, one can speculate, all right? Now, with Sherry's kids being taken pretty often, the kids growing up, she started talking her teen sons into getting girls pregnant so that she could have the babies, and hoped for girls every time. You know, she even stated how she wanted them all to have at least one child by the time they hit 16. And any time that it was a girl, that girl would belong to her. Now, obviously, her toxicity then started to rub off on the kids. They all started getting into the gang life. And then, though there's not really any 100% verification that they were true Crips, they all claimed to be Crips. And she considered herself one, being the mother to so many. Now, you'll see many pics of her and her kids throwing up gang signs, you know, looking like they're arthritic retards. I mean, again, I don't typically like the retard, but when I'm talking about somebody being a stupid dumbass, okay, I'm gonna use it right here. You know, Punky was well known as the leader in that area of the Crips, so, I mean, Punky himself was part of this. We do know that for sure. How many of the others were truly in it, we really, really don't know. But Punky was actually feared in Finley, even at 19 years old. However, at 19, in 2010, he was killed when on the way to go score some heroin, and a vehicle just happened to slam into him. Now, while they determined his death as an accident, Sherry needed to find revenge. She wanted to put it on somebody, because it couldn't have just been an accident. With him being what he was and who he was, it couldn't have just been an accident. So she needed her own idea of closure. In order to do this, she put her sights on Punky's girlfriend, Heather. Now, she's saying, because Heather was with him, that she thinks that Heather pushed him in front of the vehicle. That she did it, she forced him into the road while this van or truck or whatever was coming through. She has Heather beaten while she sits there and watches and cheers her kids on. Then she had Zachary take his brother's place as the town's new leader of the Crips. Now, let's go ahead and get back to Vera, because I can go on and on about the bullshit in that family. Now, Vera is living in the Brooks' house. She's drawing disability for her mental issues. But she wasn't the one cashing her disability checks when they came through. Sherry was cashing them each month. Come to find out, most of the inhabitants of that dwelling, which I can't bring myself to call a house or a home, were on disability, and they supported themselves with welfare, disability, you know, they had food stamps, they have, you know, any kind of government assistance they could possibly get for just being horrible people, okay? You know, I mean, it's one thing to get it while you're, you know, in the middle of trying to find another job. Let's say you got laid off or, you know, whatever. If you need to use unemployment for a little while, you need to use food stamps for just a little while to get afloat. Do what you've got to do, but it's not there to live off of for the rest of your fucking life. Try and do something for yourself, you know? Anyway. They also were involved in a lot of criminal activities, like selling drugs and who knows what else. For all we know, she was probably pimping out the boys' girlfriends and shit. Like, I mean, there's really no telling what kind of shit they were doing there. They even would walk across the street to the Salvation Army for meals at times at the soup kitchen, where Vera was seen on quite a few occasions. Because it was easier to just go over there and eat than have to use their food stamps when they probably could sell them for drugs or sell them for other shit or whatever. Now, Sherry demanded that Vera and Zachary have a baby. You know, like I said earlier, she wanted all her boys to have a baby by the time they were 16. Now, Vera was always wanting to please those around her. So she was like, yeah, you know, okay, you know, well, I care about him, so yeah, let's have a baby. However, when she did get pregnant, she wasn't treated so well. And she was turned into a bit of a slave for the family. Essentially a baby machine, as well as their own punching bag. Now, Sherry claimed immediately finding out that Vera was expecting a girl, that the baby was hers, and even went as far as controlling when baby Willadine would be born. Sherry named the baby. Sherry named her Willadine. And she swore, you know, you're going to have this baby on my birthday. You're going to have this baby on my birthday. I don't care what we've got to do. And she forces Vera to down 3 bottles of castor oil to induce labor. 3 fucking bottles. Like, typical, like, you're trying to induce labor, you're at the end of your ropes, you're at the end of the pregnancy, you're in that last week or so, and you're just like, oh my God, just come on, I can't do this anymore. You take a couple spoonfuls. You don't drink a whole fucking bottle, let alone 3. Well, so Vera swallows these 3 bottles of castor oil. But Willadine wasn't ready yet. And it took another whole day before she was finally brought into the world. So she comes the day after Sherry's birthday and was more than a month early. Now, this early delivery caused her to be stuck in the hospital during her first few weeks of life, hooked up to machines in the NICU, being born with heart issues. Which makes me also think about Vera and her treatment. It makes me think about, you know, what her diet was, what was she able to have, what were they not allowing her to have, what was her physical treatment during the pregnancy. They obviously didn't treat her well. So, plus an early birth. You know, this baby didn't really have a chance. She had heart issues. She had, you know, I mean, preemies usually have all kinds of other issues as well. And for it to be a forced labor scares me a little as well. Thankfully, she turned out to be pretty healthy. Now, Vera's love for Willadine was not questioned at all whatsoever. And she would have made an absolutely amazing mom if she had been able to have the ability to do so. However, Sherry took over the moment that baby came into the home. And she told Willadine from day one that she was her mother and would barely even allow Vera to interact with her. If Vera touched her or interacted with her at all, she'd be beaten. She'd been forced to tend to the home, forced to take care of Sherry's feet, which had to be rubbed and massaged due to circulation issues, partly because of the fact that she was just a lazy, manipulating, fat slob who just didn't take care of herself. You know, she rubbed my feet. You know, oh, I can just hear her. Like, she probably had sores. She probably had all these nasty things from not taking care of herself. So she made Vera her slave to deal with these things. Now, Vera was not allowed to interact with anyone outside of the home, even. Like, even her sister, you know, as much as she loved her sister, as much as her sister was her lifeline, her best friend, she wasn't allowed to converse with her, talk to her. You know, if she ran into her somewhere, it was, I can't talk. I can't talk. She ran into people she knew. I can't talk right now. They won't let me talk to you. She tried to leave with Willadine a couple of times. But Sherry always sent someone after them and wouldn't allow them out the door, threatening that if she left, she'd take Willadine and slit her throat in front of her. Another big issue here was that the baby had to sleep in Sherry's room. And out of fear for Willadine, Vera stayed. And she endured years of abuse, being treated worse and worse as time went on. They would beat her and whip her as though it was cute. They thought it was really cute when she was walking around with black eyes, saying, oh, she looked like such a cute little squirrel or raccoon. The abuse wasn't just beatings either. Now, she was forced to sleep in a closet with one of the pigs. Sometimes forced to eat feces from one of the many animals in the home, whether it was the pig, dog, or cat. They didn't care. There was even a time that she had been starved, and unfortunately she ate a Kit Kat bar that had been left out that had belonged to Punky, who had recently died. Now, she was starving, and she was like, you know, it's been sitting there, and it's been sitting there. I don't think anyone would miss it. And she took a bite and was beaten. In the Brooks' eyes, she intentionally disrespected Punky and his memory. So again, she was beaten by almost everyone in the home. Now, there was also an incident with a mace can being set off in an upstairs bedroom. Regardless of whose fault it was, they all put it on Vera. Now, during this incident, Sherry's son Michael's girlfriend Shannon supposedly was pregnant at this time. Now, there are screenshots to show that she did say she was pregnant, you know, but whether she was or not, like, we really don't know. But supposedly, she was rushed to the hospital on the same day as the mace incident, stating that she's miscarried a baby. All because of the subjection to the pepper spray, the mace. You know, she comes home, she talks about how, you know, well, she lost the baby, there was no heartbeat, you know, they had to do a DNC, they had to do all these different things that you have to do, you know, when you lose a baby. You know, sometimes you can lose everything can pass on its own, and other times, you know, depending on the gestation, you have to have what's called a DNC, a dilation and curettage, where they go in and help remove all of this from your womb, okay? Now, this supposed miscarriage just added fuel to the fire. And this time, the blame of that miscarriage was also put on Vera. She was beaten this time beyond recognition. Now, you're probably asking now, how come nobody ever turned them in? There had to have been neighbors. There had to have been people who had seen her. And there were. And they did. However, regardless of the number of visits made, there didn't seem to make any kind of difference. DSS, DCF, whatever they call it there. Regardless, they would threaten her and she would convince the authorities that she liked it there. She liked living there. She didn't want to leave. She wanted them to leave, you know? Now, here are a few other things that were going on in the house along with the abuse. Now, the home was absolutely filthy. Sherry didn't go to a toilet, but peed in a bucket that absolutely was in reach of the toddler. There were actual pigs living in the home along with the long pigs, or the humans. And they were defecating and urinating all over the home, wherever they wanted. They all knew about the sexual abuse and that Willa Dean was sleeping in Sherry's room with her, which, hell to the no, because I would slit that fat bitch's throat in her sleep and run off with my baby. Vera was coached into telling them stories about how she got her bruises or injuries, such as falling down the stairs, slipping, being in a fight with a black boyfriend from a town over that didn't exist, or just saying she didn't want them there or whatever. Now, it was anything to get them to leave and not have anyone charged with anything. You see in the documentary that they even talked to someone who was a 911 dispatcher who said it got to the point where we knew Sherry's voice. She'd call, we knew exactly what it was. Like, they didn't want to deal with her. You know, unfortunately, you get those kind of people who just call and call and call, you know, for one thing or another, and it's like, God, you know, what now? They knew that family because of the gang affiliation, because of the DSS issues, because of the abuse issues. They knew so much about this family that anyone involved in that system was like, oh God, not again. Now, Zachary used Vera to have Willa Dean. He never wanted to be in her, like, to be with her. However, she wanted to be with him because she wanted to have that happy family, you know, mom, dad, and child. She just wanted that to be okay. Now, Zachary was dating and sleeping with other girls, doing whatever the hell he wanted, you know, whatever. She was just the live-in. Now, once Willa Dean was born, they did whatever they could think of to get Vera out of the picture and continually voiced plans on how to get rid of her, whether it be an overdose, letting her get hit by a train, shooting her, beating her to death, strangling her, like, you name it, they probably talked about it. Now, shortly before the climax of this case, a cousin, Daniel Bixler, who happened to also be the son of the cousin with whom she had her oldest son, Scotty, came to stay with Sherry. So, in other words, this Danny Bixler was also half-brother to Sherry's oldest son, Scotty, okay? Trying to clarify some of this, because this incestuous mishmash of just raw sewage that is this family can get a little confusing at times. Now, Danny and his girlfriend, 17-year-old Nicole Peters, were staying there and showing that they were absolutely part of the family. Danny had a teardrop tattoo under his eye to show that he had killed once and would do it again. Sherry told the two that instead of Heather pushing Punky in front of the vehicle, that Vera had done it, that she happened to be there, and she was jealous So she was the one that pushed her. There were also comments made about, well, she slept with all the boys in the house, you know, now she's going to want Danny too. Which made Nicole not like her. Now, they were also told of the macing incident and how it supposedly had brought on a miscarriage with Shannon. And the worst was saying that Vera was the one abusing Willadine when no one was looking. After all this shit, and after being told all this stuff, they agreed to help get rid of her, along with 13-year-old Chucky, who was probably named after Sherry's dad, Big Chuck. Now, I do just want to kind of jump in here and be like, you know, did we verify that all these Brooks kids were Kevin Brooks's kids? Or were some of these kids her own siblings? Like, do we really know that? Because if she was still carrying on this sexual relationship with her father, to the point where her father would walk in the house, tell her husband, Kevin, all right, get out of the bedroom. Get out of the bedroom. You got to go sleep on the couch. And he would go sleep with his daughter. What? I'm sorry. But what? And he just turned a blind eye to it? Makes me wonder how many of those kids are probably, you know, her brother sons or whatever. Now, over 4 days, Vera was beaten almost nonstop. The beatings turned on the couple, Danny and Nicole, and they'd stop long enough to go upstairs and have sex. They got off on it. They'd get more and more excited the more they abused her. Now, but she wasn't the only one, like, they weren't the only ones getting off on it. Sherry got off on it as well, as the beatings always happened in her bedroom downstairs. Now, this continued multiple times over the 4 days, including beatings with a homemade whip made from a belt with a padlock tied to the end. A large paddle that was used multiple times over her butt. And I believe I saw somewhere that they actually might have broken it across her ass. Or something like that. She was left with like huge marks or something from it. They even stomped her head. Sherry egged on the abuse as much as she could, cheering and jeering for them that, you know, they were doing what she wanted them to do. And knowing that Willadine was sleeping in Sherry's room and the abuse was happening there, this lets us have a pretty good assumption that she was witnessing the abuse against her mother at only 18 months old. Now, on the night of March 26th of 2011, Zachary, Danny, and Nicole made Vera put her shoes on to go on a walk. Those who were around during this time, you know, said that she knew that she was on her way to her death and that she just did whatever she was told. She was walked to the railroad tracks near her home, and in a wooded area, they started to stab her with a kitchen knife that was taken from the home. However, the knife was so dull that it wouldn't penetrate the clothing and the skin. So they had her stripped down naked. After all this, they find her clothing. Like pieces hanging in the tree where it was just thrown. She was repeatedly stabbed multiple times. And when they thought that she was about dead, they laid her on the tracks, left alone in the frigid temps to die. After they left, they threw the knife into a body of water nearby. And they knew at this point that the train was going to come about 1 or 2 a.m. I believe it's actually 2 a.m. And hoped that she would be hit, and I quote, turning her into hamburger meat. Now, that's kind of important because apparently Sherry had told them a story. Look, I saw a guy that got hit by a train one time. You couldn't even recognize him. His face looked like hamburger meat. So she told the kids about this story multiple times. And of course, this is where they got the idea to put her on the tracks. Because if she wasn't identifiable, they wouldn't be held responsible. However, when they left her alone, she used every tiny bit of energy and strength that she had left in her to pull herself off the rail, where she curled up into a fetal position and passed away. When the train approached at 2 a.m., it did pass over her, but the conductor said that he thought, at first, in the distance, that it was a deer that had been hit. But once he got right up on her, as he started to slow down, he realized that it was human. He immediately had stopped the train, called 911. Her body was exactly 1 inch from the underside of the train, just barely being missed. Now, what a lot of people don't understand is, you know, yeah, there's some room underneath the train, you know, between the ties and the train itself, but it's only 13 inches. She was balled up to where her body was only 12 inches high. 1 inch. 1 fucking inch from being just destroyed. She was identifiable, and a person who had recently seen her was able to identify her identity. Now, the autopsy showed that she had been stabbed 21 times. Her throat had also been slashed from ear to ear, and almost every single bone in her face had been broken. She had truly been tortured. And it was very apparent that she'd been enduring this for a very long time. When police went to the home to question the family again, they removed everyone from the home so they could interview everyone one at a time and also kind of look at the home. Sherry tried to blame the imaginary black boyfriend, and it was apparent that everyone feared Sherry and wanted to please her. And that whatever she wanted her minions to do, they would do. Inside the home, they found the evidence that they needed. Nicole's bloody sweatshirt, the paddle, the belt with the padlock, and more. Danny and Nicole even confessed, stating that they had been given drugs by Sherry and that she had talked them into killing her and told them exactly how to do it. Now, Danny and Nicole took plea deals when everything was said and done. Danny got 40 years to life. Nicole, 23 years on a conspiracy charge, which she stabbed her as well. She should have gotten murder as well. Don't understand why she didn't get charged with murder. Zachary, Willadine's father, only got 4 years for obstruction of justice. What? How is that all he gets? Now, there was security footage from the Salvation Army showing that he was with them when they left. Now, there are other charges on other family members, but they were obstruction charges, drug charges, that kind of thing. And in 2014, Sherry spent 10 days in jail for inappropriate contact with an unrelated minor. Only 10 fucking days. She was abusing again. Sherry was only charged with obstruction in Vera's death and sentenced to only 40 months for that and drug trafficking in 2015. And get this, if I remember right, I don't even think she was actually put in jail for that. I think it was more of a house arrest thing because she was just a fat slob of a bitch. Like, I don't know. But, and I may be wrong there. Maybe she did go to the prison. I don't know. But 40 months... I don't think she should have gotten 40 years. Minimal. 40 years to life. Oh. So it makes you wonder. What happened to Willadine, right? Well, within 24 hours of Vera's death, Sherry's on the phone. You know, oh, well, now that she's gone, like... You know, Willadine has to go to Zachary. Zachary's her father. Zachary's her, you know, her rightful custodian. So, you know, thank God they didn't let this happen. Willadine was taken from the Brooks family and adopted out. Let me tell you, this little girl, beautiful little girl with the prettiest, brightest blue eyes. A gorgeous little girl. And I can really only just hope and pray that she has a wonderful life after all that bullshit. And that it didn't fuck her up mentally. I'm really hoping it didn't fuck her mentally. I hope she does wonderful, wonderful things with her life. Now, Sherry complained about this, stating that she had custody when she didn't. Now, the craziest thing is Sherry was out. The last we heard that she had had another of her grandchildren living in her care. Now, at the time of the majority of my research, you know, this is my notes. I do have an update, however. So... Until I got the update about 10 minutes before I started recording, you know, my belief was she's still at large, an active pedophile, and even continues to go on Facebook pages and that honor Vera Jo to get attention. Now, all from the show are still very intimidated and scared of her, and watching this documentary, she talks as if she's innocent in everything and tries to convince everyone of this. It's awful. Like, she looks at you like, what? How could anybody look at me? How could anybody think I would do this? She even puts on the fake tears. You know, that it was oh so awful. But in the same breath, we'll say how she blamed her foot issues because Vera, that fucking bitch, she threw a damn rock and messed up my foot. But then she's all, I don't understand. I don't know how anybody could have hurt her. I don't, you know, so she's a bit of a character. Now, update. Again, it was like 10 minutes before I started recording the episode, sorry. Ding dong, the fucking bitch is dead. February 4th of this year, 2021. Sherry Brooks died in her sleep of cancer. Not sure what kind of cancer, but normally there's remorse for hearing somebody's passed away. In this case, I hope that bitch rots in fucking hell. Thank fucking God she's gone. And she can't hurt anyone else. Now, I will tell you guys, if you want to watch a really great, really well done documentary, it's on YouTube and it's by John Crimes called Messerschmitt, The Story of Vera Jo. This is a really sweet black guy that does these great, great little, you know, they're not super long, but it gets the point across. He's, you know, got a great heart. You can see that. He's very sympathetic to everything, like, goes into really great detail. Just does it very well. He's got some pictures. He's got videos of Vera, like when she was little bitty, and, you know, videos of the Brooks family to show really kind of what they were. Definitely a good one to watch. There are other ones that you've seen other people cover the case on YouTube, but he did it very, very well. I've seen some of the autopsy photos, and they're pretty rough. They're really rough. You'll see some of them in the documentary, Goodnight Sugar Babe, and supposedly, Goodnight Sugar Babe was the last thing she had said when she left that house. Now, who knows whatever else was said. I believe most likely she probably begged for her life, you know, so she could be with her daughter. But at that point, after 4 days of abuse right beforehand, after all of the bullshit, she probably just probably asked Zachary to take care of Willadine. In my opinion, I probably would have done the same thing. I would have probably said, you know what? Do whatever you want to me. Just take care of my baby. Don't hurt her. Don't let her get hurt. So with all that being said, that's the episode. It's kind of a tough case. There's a lot going on. Again, watching the documentary, it can be a little bit of a mismatch, fucked up shit show. But, you know, watch it. Again, you might have to watch it a second time to kind of understand certain relationships and things in there, but it'll all eventually make sense in the end, I think. So, great case. Thanks, Dez, for, you know, telling me about this one. This was just definitely one that I'm glad that it's out there and that people know about it. And I really, truly feel there's groups out there called Justice for Vera Jo. Please, like, I feel more people are responsible. I feel like Sherry should have been held more responsible, and I think more people need to be held responsible. Because even in these documentaries, you know, you've got a couple of the people, like the girlfriend, Shannon, and, you know, those couple of people who I think may have, you know, they're held as slightly innocent here, but I think they need to be held accountable as well. So, anyway, hope you guys enjoyed. If you have any comments, concerns, anything, email me at serialzombiemoms@gmail.com. Hit me up on the Facebook group or on my Instagram, and I will post some pictures probably in the next 24 hours about this. So I hope that you guys enjoyed, and I will see you guys on the next one. Thanks so much.